morning, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of Thursday in the Doghouse. I'm your host, Rini Premeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer. Our 30-minute program is designed to help you, the dog-owning community, learn as much as possible about your canine companions. Thousands of dogs wind up in animal shelters each year because we humans lack very important information and understanding about why our dogs do the things they do. Many people aren't aware that early socialization prevents much of the fear aggression we see and hear about in our dogs today. Many people are also unaware that the majority of problem behaviors we experience with our dogs is due to lack of physical exercise and mental stimulation. Parents need to be much more informed and aware that constant supervision is critically important anytime young children are interacting with dogs. Many children, including infants, sadly wind up in the emergency room with serious facial injuries simply because someone walked out of the room when a child and dog were together. Our subject for today's discussion is about how to keep kids and dogs safe when they're together. I'm very happy to have as my guest this morning Jennifer Shryock, a certified dog behavior consultant from North Carolina whose specialty and expertise is kids and dogs. I'm looking forward to talking with Jen this morning, and I hope you'll listen carefully to everything that she has to tell us today, especially if you're a parent of a young child and have a dog living with you. Before we talk to Jennifer, please let me tell you about the services I offer as a professional dog trainer in the South Jersey area. Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rini Premeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338. We're on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. We have Jennifer on the line now. Good morning, Jen.
Good morning, Rini. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I am so grateful that you're visiting with us in the doghouse today, and I'm glad you're returning after several years of our doing this before.
Absolutely.
Jen, you and I both know how important it is to educate parents about keeping kids and dogs safe with each other. So can we just get right to the heart of this matter? Are you ready?
I am ready.
Good. Can you explain to our listeners about the dangers of leaving a dog, even a puppy, alone with a toddler?
Absolutely. Even a puppy. I would say especially a puppy.
There you go.
You know, the dangers are really that dogs are dogs. They communicate as dogs. And a lot of times we as people don't know and recognize what those body language signals are and what a dog is trying to communicate. In fact, I just did a new post on my blog, dogsandstorks.blogspot.com, that has a video that really clearly shows this. There's a lot of body language that we don't understand, but more importantly, that toddlers can also misinterpret. For example, when a dog licks their lips or does a tongue flick, indicating they might need more space, a child may view that as a kiss and move in closer to the dog, requesting eye contact. All of those things go against what is comfortable for many, many dogs, and that is a leading cause to some situations. So we really need to have 100% supervision, especially with small children, with the dog, so that a parent can intervene and sees what's going on.
I have to tell you, I have seen the DVD, Dogs and Storks, and your examples in your videos are excellent. It's very, very clear, and when you watch that, it really brings it home how important it is to recognize these signals And we will often misinterpret them, whether it's a child or an adult. We don't know what we're looking at, really. One of the things that I would ask you is, does it concern you when you hear about children playing on the floor when the dog is free to roam around the same room?
It is very concerning. And a lot of the homes that I go into when I ask what happened, because usually the calls that I get are about a bite, usually a facial bite, and when I inquire about what was going on at the time of the incident, usually it's, you know, mom was in the other room making dinner or doing something and left them unattended. And again, if there is not an adult for the dog to defer to, basically you're leaving two babies alone.
Right.
Dog really is going to respond and communicate as they do. And dogs are limited in their vocabulary, if you've noticed. I mean, I have four dogs and four kids. And, I've not heard our dogs pick up the kids' language yet. So, you know, we really need to be mindful that dogs are limited in their communication, and they're going to show subtle signs before they ever vocalize or give a sound.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important for parents to understand.
Yeah, and I think you raise a very good point that by the time they vocalize or make any noise, the dog is already in a heightened state of fear or anxiety about what's going on in his environment, so he's already escalated in any warning signals he's given.
Absolutely.
And
they stop using the signals, actually, if they don't work consistently. So they'll escalate to what's going to work for them, because dogs are all about cause and effect, what works for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really need to be careful and do more education for families and parents, especially about what some of the subtle signs are. Most people wait for the growl, and that concerns me a great deal.
Yes, it concerns me also, and I'll tell you what else concerns me, and I get lots of calls like this just like you do. When a dog growls at a child, parents just don't understand that the dog is actually doing everybody a favor in the fact that he is giving a warning, and they think the dog is being horrible, and so they wind up punishing the dog.
A growl really should be viewed as a cry for help, and the first thing parents need to do is say, what did I miss? What did I miss? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I encourage people to keep a growl log and jot down, and hopefully don't have too many logs in. But the first thing after a growl has happened, you should stop and say who, what, where, when, and why. What was going on? What was happening in that moment? And what can we do differently to prevent that?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's really, it is a critical thing to make sure the dog is comfortable.
Sure.
Also.
Sure. What about, let's say, worst case scenario, or almost worst case scenario, the dog growls at the child and somebody goes and punishes the dog. What kind of repercussions would happen if the dog was punished in front of the child? And is there anything that you can offer there?
Sure. Just like I was saying, sometimes dogs stop using signals when they don't work and they escalate to the growl. The same is true. Many dogs, if they are punished after growling, they now learn that growling is not a good thing, and they may eliminate growling from their repertoire and their sequence of what's going to happen before they escalate to a bite. We don't want to get rid of the growling. Growling is a gift that they're offering to us. I'm not saying I like my dog's growl, but if your dog is growling at your child for any reason, you need to understand and find out why so that it doesn't escalate to a bite, because
mm-hmm.
they will only growl for so long before they take it up a notch. I mean, that's the way it is. You know, but as we talk about that and having the dogs, you know, in the room with the kids and everything, I mean, there's so many ways that we can include our kids and dogs together
mm-hmm.
in fun, supervised activities.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to talk about that?
Yeah,
a little
sure.
Bit?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I really love to include children in all that we do in consultations. And you can begin as early as, you know, I have a six-month-old, and she's beginning with open hand to pet the dogs, with my hand over her hand to pet the dogs with an open hand. And we, you know, that's something that you're teaching. This is how we do it right from the beginning. And we also play hide-and-seek.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of games. Sometimes it's a good idea, if your toddler is a little uncomfortable, is to actually stand them up on something, whether it be a chair, elevate them, put them up on a step, and let them be a little taller, and you stand behind them and give hand signals to your dog. Those are great ways to include your toddler.
That's great. I love that idea.
All the activities must be structured. When a toddler approaches a dog, that is where we end up in trouble, because many dogs immediately get uncomfortable with a toddler approaching them because, face it, toddlers are pretty unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what they're going to do, let alone the dog.
Right.
And so we really want to put it so it's a win-win and have the dog interacting in a structured and successful situation.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of games, hide-and-seek, fetch, kibble hunt. I play a game called Can't Touch This, where the toddler, you know, when you have a 3 or 4 year old, says, leave it. And then we tell them, okay, take it. You know, and kids love that because, well, aren't we telling them?
Right.
Look with your eyes. Don't touch that. So
yeah,
now
I'm sure.
A chance to get back at that a little.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Great ideas. So what do you say to parents, when they brag about the fact that their dog is able to put up with their child's behaviors, like pulling tails and ears and riding the dog just like a horse and pinching the dog? Can you offer some advice to those parents?
Absolutely. I hear this all the time. And one of the things that I say is, if you are telling me and listing all those things, you're basically admitting that you know you're challenging your dog's tolerance. And tolerance runs out. And I know my tolerance runs out, and I fully, with my kids, and I fully expect that other people's does as well. So, and we're humans. We communicate the same way. Dog's tolerance runs out as well. So if you're listing all the things your kids get away with your dog that make it a good dog, I would really look at that and say, am I challenging my dog's tolerance? You know, if we had a relative or a friend visit the house and our kids sat on them and pinched them and pulled their hair and jumped all over them, I don't think we would be saying, wow, that's the greatest guest we ever had because look what our kid could do to them.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'd be concerned about our child's behavior and you know, how that's going to impact them with interacting with other people.
Right.
We should be worried about that, too, with our dogs.
Right.
Your child really needs to respect your family dog as much as they're going to have to respect all dogs, because if your child is doing these things at home, they're in a very dangerous situation.
Absolutely.
With someone else's dog.
Mm-hmm. Right, because they don't know any better.
They don't know any better, and they feel that that's the way we're supposed to treat dogs. And, you know, it really is important for parents to teach their children how to behave around them. And dogs get older, and, you know, they have less tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's never the first time. So when people say their dog will tolerate it and puts up with these things and they can do all these things, for how long? It's always until you can't.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we should wait until that point. We need to respect what our dog's trying to tell us about their comfort level. Oh. Otherwise, we're going to pay a heavy price.
And so will the dog.
The dog will. We don't have, we're not a big society now for giving dogs second chances.
Right.
And
right.
You can't rehome a dog that has bitten.
Correct. Not a shelter, not a rescue. Nobody is going to take a dog in. And so there's usually only one option left. And I don't even want to think about that, because most of the dogs that this happens to are really good dogs. We talked about, you know, people don't think that, we don't have to leave we don't have to worry about the puppy being with the baby. But a lot of puppies lose their homes too because of this horrible misinterpretation, misunderstanding about, and high expectations of what we expect our puppies and dogs to be able to tolerate. And so it's scary out there.
We actually provide very confusing environments for our dogs. We expect them to be protectors and do these things, but yet if they bite, well, they've crossed the line. So
right.
We often put dogs in situations that they're not ever likely to be successful in, and,
mm-hmm.
and we really need to look at that.
Right. I spoke with you a while back, and you gave me some great ideas and information to impart to my own clients about the high chair, about, you know, when they allow the dogs to lay right by the high chair while the child is eating or lay under the high chair. Can you give us some information about that and some good advice as to where a dog belongs when a child is eating and about the high chair?
Exactly. And actually, I'm going through this right now with our six-month-old. She's discovered that it's very cute, you know, to throw things and things like that. And, you know, really the dog should only be accepting things from your child when they're given, you know, a command and cue that says, yes, this is okay,
mm-hmm.
for many reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's something that they shouldn't have, and you can have lots of tummy upsets. But also, too, we don't want the high chair becoming a source of a resource that the dog may choose to guard. And we really don't want them freely grabbing at things and
mm-hmm.
thinking that every time your child raises their hand or moves their, encourages grabbing of food. So we really want the dog to have their own place in the kitchen, away from where your children are eating. And that way, when they're done with a meal, when you choose, either the child can give an all done or cleanup cue, throw their hands in the air, which at that point the dog can come and clean things up, or you can tell the dog, okay, now you may go clean it up. That way it's under control, it's a predictable time, the dog's not grabbing and rushing for food, it's only when you have instructed that now is the time you may do that, I'm inviting you to do it.
Good. And I think that you told me that when you give the dog a release cue to do that, to remove the high chair, move it out of the way so that the dog does not associate getting that food directly in the area where the high chair is.
Absolutely. We do want to remove the high chair so that there is no association with that, and that does not become a resource where the dog feels they need to guard it. Especially, this is so true, if you have multiple dogs in the house, yeah, one may choose to guard that high chair and think that it's very high value.
Oh, my goodness.
Value.
I can see a fight happening now in my head, you know, with more than one dog trying to clean up around the high chair. That must be horrible.
Well, and we don't want the dog to feel that they should be cleaning up the high chair.
Right.
Lots of things get left on the high chair. We want the focus to be on what is on the floor, what is left behind, and not so much about the high chair itself.
Right.
Because that will become an item of guarding.
How much do you see of problems with a dog that was able to accept the infant? When the infant came home, either the people did the necessary desensitization with baby crying sounds, and they took that advice, and they did everything correctly, and the dog was great when the mom was carrying the baby around the house, and all of that was wonderful. But how many times, how often do you see that there's a problem once that baby becomes mobile, once that baby starts crawling? What do you see out there?
That is the time when we have problems. Really coming home and bringing the baby home is usually a non-event. Most dogs fly through that, and it actually gives people a false sense of security where they start to, they expected such a problem and potential conflict at that time. And it is not about that time. We need to prepare, absolutely. But you're preparing really for down the road. It's critical that people develop familiarity between the baby and the dog and include the dog safely. But when that baby starts moving around, you have to think about it. Dogs are detectives with body language. They study our body language, and they really count on predictability and consistent movement. Toddlers have no consistency about them, especially when they're developing the gross motor skills. That really becomes an uncertain time for dogs, even for parents. And the fact that parents are on guard all the time with their new crawler or walker, they're constantly anxious about what's going in the mouth and if they're going to fall over. All of that also can cause stress for the dog and create an association of stress. So the toddler time and the time of beginning walking, and when a child becomes very mobile, it is very intimidating to most dogs and makes even the calmest of dogs pretty uncomfortable. And that is the time that I see most of my clients.
So if, yeah, unfortunately, it's always after the fact.
Yeah.
It's always after the fact. And so I've been lately, actually, I've been seeing an awful lot of expectant parents, and it is always,
good,
it's after the fact. And so, thank God I've been able to, you know, educate these people before any problems have really developed.
Yeah.
But thank God the owners have seen that there's something going on that they need to fix. They need to really work on this. One of the things that I would like to talk to you about and find out more about is, in preparation for this infant becoming a toddler, what advice would you give parents to begin working on looking toward the future when that baby starts to crawl around? What type of training would you do with the dog before the baby becomes mobile?
Well, actually, as a mom of a six-month-old right now, I'm going through this very thing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that I really encourage people to do, and you're on the floor most of the time anyway, but really, really including your dog as much as you can, allowing them to view your child on the floor with you being right there. It's important that your dog gets comfortable with the baby at different levels and they see them at that different level. In the infant stage, a lot of times the baby's in your arm or in some kind of swing or is at a higher level. Now, you know, at 3 months really is the time to be sitting on the floor when your baby's doing tummy time and allowing your dog to view this new posture and to view all the changes going on from a safe distance and comfortable. And again, you know, I have four dogs. We have four all rescues, and they're all large dogs. And, you know, every one of them has different rules and restrictions in my house. And to include them, we use all sorts of measures, and we also have many dog zones, including gates, crates, tethers. And those are all tools that you can use to help include your dog and allow them to see things at a comfortable distance. It's important that they start to view your child at the floor level, sitting up in your lap, and seeing how they're moving, what they're doing, and getting and experiencing new squeals and sounds that they're making while you're there. You must always be there.
Mm-hmm. This is so wonderful. I'm so glad you're here. I spoke with a woman about a week ago, and this is a former client who now is expecting a baby. And one of the first things that I told her was that she should never have the baby on the floor. She's got three dogs. She's got two very, very, energetic and a little bit hyper pugs, and she has an older lab. And when I told her that it would not be safe to have all of the dogs around, even one dog around while the baby was on the floor, she looked at me like I was a little crazy, and she really never thought of that. And so, you know, this is important stuff that you have to prepare for this. I'm a big fan of tethers. Do you use tethers a lot?
I use tethers a lot, but you have to be extremely careful. Tethers are not appropriate for all dogs.
Right.
If there's any resistance to a tether, that is not the right tool to use.
Okay.
So I use tethers with caution. I love tethers, but the dog needs to know that that's a, I call it a success station, and it's a positive experience.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what I want it to do, you've got to remove the tethers as soon as the child becomes mobile. So you have a window that tethers are absolutely the key component in what we're doing and developing familiarity and a bond. But when that baby is able to get to the dog, tethers are out of the picture.
Okay.
Yeah.
And can you explain why?
Anytime you put a restriction and a resistance on a dog and you contain them, you make them more vulnerable. Therefore, they may actually act out in aggression.
Mm-hmm.
Just like we don't like dogs chained up in the yard, and that can lead to some very dangerous situations, we all know.
Right.
The same thing is true. They feel vulnerable. They cannot get away, and that puts everybody in a bad situation. So tethers should not be used when a child can reach the dog.
Okay. And suppose we have a one-year-old child. The whole family is in the same room. We have a very active one-year-old baby boy who is running or crawling around and playing with his toys. And we have, I'm thinking of a sweet family that I just met, and they have a little dog. And the dog wants to be with the family, of course, and especially very interested to be around the child. If they are all in the same room supervising, would you suggest that this family keep the dog at least on the leash and possibly holding onto the leash? Or would that create the same frustration that might happen on a tether?
A leash is a different thing because it is attached to the person. That can be good and that can be bad. Sometimes that can actually cause more conflict because someone is being reactive with their leash and is actually pulling back.
Okay.
And creating more tension. So you have to be very careful. I like to use items when I use a tether more than I like to use people sometimes. And it just depends on each situation.
Mm-hmm.
But if the dog is able to do a nice down and is sitting by the adult's, that's not a problem. My dogs are often on the couch or hanging out in the
mm-hmm.
house. I have several that are permitted on the couch, and they don't have guarding issues, and others that aren't. You know, I might have two in the room because their behavior is appropriate. They listen to my hand signals. They
mm-hmm.
listen to my verbal commands, and they'll do what I ask them to do. If I say back away, they're going to back away.
Mm-hmm.
You
Wonderful.
Need to have practiced this kind of control. Most people don't have a lot of control over their dogs when they're sitting on the floor. And that's where I get concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you have a lot of very, you know, you really need to hone in on your cues, cues mm-hmm. and make sure that your dog does the appropriate follow through,
right.
then you can include your dog a lot more. Again, as long as you see your dog is comfortable and is not sitting there getting anxious and stressed out by your child's behavior, I would include them in the room, whether or not they need a leash or not. Every case is individual in that situation.
Okay. All right. This is just wonderful. So very briefly, Jen, well, not so briefly. We do have a few more minutes. Tell us about your program, Dogs and Storks, and the DVD that you've put out. You've gotten a lot of kudos from a lot of important people about your program, and I'm very proud of you because I know you and I knew you when you first started it, and you've put an awful lot of effort into it.
And you were one of the first people that really urged me to continue and to do it and to put it out there, and I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate the good work that you do.
We have a long history.
Yeah, we do. So tell us about the program a little bit, and tell us about the DVD and where people can get it.
Sure. Dogs and Storks began in 2002. We now have over 60 presenters in the country, and we have Puerto Rico and Canada, and we have a lot of different locations. And we provide education and support for new and expecting families. And our website is dogsandstorks.com. But I really encourage people to check out our blog, too, which is dogsandstorks.blogspot.com for ongoing education and information that is extremely helpful for new parents with dogs and babies.
Okay.
And actually, I'm doing updates about our family situation with our four dogs and my baby girl.
Are you still recommending the website dogonsafe.com?
Absolutely, dogonsafe.com has a great deal of information about body language and a lot of free materials for anybody who's out there doing education in schools and that kind of thing is mm-hmm. a great resource.
Okay. So I want to let everybody know, too, that this information will be on my website. If you just click on Renee's radio show and you get to that page, you'll see probably by tomorrow or the day after, you'll see the podcast for this program if you want to hear it again, which I hope that you will listen to it many times. And Jen's information will be on the page near that podcast, so that you can click on her website. You can probably order the DVD, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Purchase the DVD.
Good. Jen, thank you very much. I'm grateful that you were here. Please tell me that you'll come back and do this again.
Absolutely. Anytime, Renee.
All right. Thank you so much. And you have a great day. And enjoy your six-month-old.
Absolutely.
Thanks. We'll
Bye-bye.
Talk to you again. Bye-bye. Before we end our program today, Before we end our program today, I'd like to let you know that Camden County College in Blackwood, New Jersey offers a 12-week course in animal-assisted therapy and activities. This course trains students in the techniques of bringing pets to visit seniors, children, hospitals, and nursing homes where people can benefit from the healing touch of animals. Classes begin on Saturday morning, January 30th. To register, contact the Camden County College Continuing Education Office at 856-374-4955 or on the web at www.camdencc.edu/CE. Again, that's 856-374-4955 or on the web at camdencc.edu/CE. I want to thank you for listening today. Please be sure to listen in again next week when we'll be talking to one of our regular visitors, Darlene Arden, about the toy and miniature breeds. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Even though the weather's cold, get your dogs out for a good walk every day.
Who let the dog-